How are you now? How are you right now? Hello and welcome, folks, to episode 74 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast presented by Habs Eyes on the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and we're here to talk about your Montreal Canadiens. Still on home ice. Nice little homestand here to close out the year. Well, no, they got to go on the road again, but they're staying in the East at least. They're not going to be in the West with those late start times. Taking on the Florida Panthers, though, this time. I don't think I really need to set the stage for this one too much. We all know what's going on. Panthers, they're, you know, jousting for top spot in the Atlantic Division. And the Montreal Canadiens, well, I don't want to speak too soon, folks, but I dare say I do not think that they will be winning the Atlantic Division this season. It is a tough out for them, right? However, Florida played the night prior. But you guys know, anybody who listens to this podcast often anyways knows how I feel about if professional athletes using the excuse of I played last night. That's not a very long trip from Toronto to Montreal by airplane, which they most certainly took. And I don't want to hear any excuses from you, Florida. If I was a Florida fan, I would say the same thing. I don't want to hear any excuses. So an opportunity here for the Montreal Canadiens to maybe play spoiler a little bit, because the Leafs are also trying to catch Florida and potentially jump them to get into second place in the Atlantic. So we got a pretty significantly long recap to get through here, so we're going to jump right into it. But before we do, the tournament is here. And I'm, of course, talking about March Madness. Folks, and BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. And remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus and your first deposit. BetOnline. The game starts here. And it was a pretty decent start to the game for the Montreal Canadiens against Florida. Honestly, first few minutes of the game, if you had to guess, like you hadn't watched any of the games this season, you sat somebody down to watch their first game of the year, and you said, guess which one of these teams is currently jousting for position atop the Atlantic Conference, or the Atlantic Division, rather, you wouldn't be able to guess. I really don't think so. It was very close looking, and you know, two good looking teams. You might guess that they were fighting with each other for top spot in the Atlantic if you didn't know any better. And it stays that way all the way until about the midway point of the period. So Lewis Tarinen, I'm not sure how to pronounce that one still. He gets a chance after a bit of a sketchy Jordan Harris pinch. So Harris pinches up the wall, but it's well covered by Jaden Struble, and he manages to poke it away from Lewis Tarinen. And Anton Lundell comes in, though, and gets it, and he's got some space to go around because Struble had to stop up in order to make that poke check. He does. He goes around, and he beats Simon Montembeau with a deke, makes it 1-0 for the Panthers. But a few minutes later, really nice exchange up near the blue line. Alex Newhook just leaves the puck for Michael Pezzetta. Pez kind of just skates in a little bit around to the top of the circle, has a look, takes the shot, and Yoel Armia cleans it up and ties the game at 1. A few minutes after that, though, Vladimir Tarasenko, he's going up the wall in the Habs zone and makes a completely ridiculous pass. I mean, there was four Habs that had sticks or skates or something in the way of that pass. Really nowhere else for him to put it, but he puts it tape to tape for Sasha Barkov at the other side. He cuts in and scores on Simon Montembeau, and it is 2-1 for the Florida Panthers. Few minutes left in the period now, right? Yoel Armia draws a hooking penalty off some really good forechecking, and then with like a minute left, Lewis Tarinen throws the puck over the glass, and so the Habs actually end the first period with a 5-on-3 for 58 seconds. They look okay on that 5-on-3, but it's just way too many passes, and they are in fact scoreless at 5-on-3 this season. In all of the chances that they've had, they have not scored a goal with a 5-on-3 power play. That's not a good look. This goes back to what I said after last episode, or during last episode, really, that the power play is something they really need to look at before they can get into that competitive territory that they're hoping to get into next season. Cole Caulfield had a couple of really good chances on that one that he missed the net with, almost like he's in his own head a little bit, because the puck hasn't been going in the way that he expects it to, the way that it usually does for him, and he's just not able to pick twine. And so we go to the end of the first period with the Habs blowing that 5-on-3 and down 2-1 to the Florida Panthers. They still have a power play to start the second period, but they can't get anything on that either. But a few minutes later, we get a mad scramble in front of the Panthers net. Brendan Gallagher is chipping away at it, banging away. The puck's loose. Anthony Stolarz can't seem to find it. And they continue play and they say no goal. But then the refs go and they go to the box and they go decide to take a look at it to see did that puck cross the line. All right. Now the replay, I'm going to be completely honest with you guys. I'm not sure that it did. It may have crossed the line, but the replay, at least that I saw on TV, looked like it wasn't conclusive enough to say that it did. So I would have been fine with them coming out and saying that's not a goal. But they come out and Eric Furlatt, the ref, announces that the puck did cross the line and we have a good goal. And he turns around and points to center. But then they regroup, and then he comes back out, turns his mic back on, and says, actually, there was a miscommunication. The puck did not cross the line, and it's not a goal. Like, I have been making an effort not to swear as much on this podcast, so I apologize for what I'm about to say, but what the actual fuck are you guys doing? How can you get the call wrong when you spent, like, I think they spent 2 minutes taking a look at it? You know what that says to me? That he came out, announced that it was a goal, and then all of a sudden they changed ideas. The first thought that came to a few people's mind is because the goal went to Brendan Gallagher, did you guys realize that it was number 11 who scored and say, oh, no, we can't possibly have that. Now, I don't think that's actually what they did. But what I do think is that when they look at some of these replays, I've said this before, that it's a coin toss for some of them. And I really think that they had no idea whether or not that puck crossed the line. I don't think they got a conclusive angle. But I think there was a bit of an argument between them all, between the refs, and of course, you know, they put the headsets on, so they're also talking to the Situation Room in Toronto, and I don't think they came to a real consensus. And then this donkey, Eric Furlatt, comes out and announces it anyways. Like, do you know how bad you look as an officiating crew when you come out and make that announcement, and then you turns out you have to, like, take it back? Whoops! Well, you didn't call no givesies backsies. Like, what the fuck are we doing? It's a clown show with NHL officials almost every game, but Montreal Canadiens, you know, they thought they had it 2-2, but then they get that goal taken away, and you know, it actually seemed to spark them a little bit. Maybe they were a little bit upset with that, because shortly after, Cole Caulfield's coming down the left wing, he has Vladimir Tarasenko draped all over him. At least three different occasions on that rush could have been called for holding, but they don't call it. They don't call it. And then Dmitry Kulikov, luckily enough, comes in and picks up the puck after the uncalled hold and throws an absolute pizza up the middle, right tape to tape to Nick Suzuki. And Nick Suzuki snipes it, beats Anthony Stolarz up high, and the game is tied at 2. And now the Habs are really outplaying the Panthers. Like I said, that goal call and then call back seemed to really spark them. And it's by a pretty fair margin, particularly in the second period. And the really good play that they're putting on out there ends up getting them a little bit more. They hem the Panthers in one more time. Puck goes up to the point. Mike Matheson has a look, fires a snapper. And Nick Suzuki, again, with a great tip out in front, gets that puck in past Anthony Stolarz. And the game is 3-2 in favor of the Montreal Canadiens. That was your score heading into the third period. And early in the third, it's the top line back out there again and playing on fire. Coming through the neutral zone, Juraj Slafkovský has the puck, and he's about to cross the blue line, but he's bottled up. He's got two guys on him. Makes a great move, takes a hit in order to tap it over to Cole Caulfield. Caulfield just skates around everyone, the net, and does a little wraparound, beats Stolarz. Can't miss the net on one of those, can you, Cole? And it's 4-2 for the Montreal Canadiens. A little later, Nick Suzuki takes a puck over the glass penalty, and it seems like maybe a door has opened for the Florida Panthers here. Are they going to be able to maybe get back into this game a little bit? But that door is immediately closed. Brandon Montour tries to dive to save a puck at the offensive blue line, and Jake Evans pokes it past, takes it all the way down, and goes under the blocker of Stolarz. It's 5-2 for the Montreal Canadiens. Things get a little bit rough from there. You know, we get, trading penalties and stuff like that. We get coincidental minors. And the Montreal Canadiens had two separate 5-on-3 opportunities out of all that mess of penalties that they couldn't score on. Late in the game, Sam Bennett, the Habs are just kind of playing very soft, not really looking to do much in the way of defending this. Sam Bennett just kind of skates around the back of the net, very similarly to how Cole Caulfield did, but he posts up in the circle and fires one and beats Samuel Montembeau. So it's 5-3. 37 seconds left in the game. Juraj Slafkovský takes a puck over the glass penalty. You're thinking maybe there's a door open for the Panthers here. They don't even try to pull their goalie. They just basically concede defeat in this one, and your final score is, in fact, 5-3 in favor of the Montreal Canadiens. What a game from them. I know that that's one that you probably want and expect the Habs to lose for the tank. You know, it's a much superior team on paper. They're definitely going to the playoffs. But make no mistake about it, they needed this game. They just lost to Toronto the night before. And take a look at the standings right now. If you don't have them open, I'll give you a second here. Pull them up on your phone while you're listening to this, unless you're driving. Then I'll give you the answer in a second. After losing to the Leafs, the Panthers are only 4 points up on them, and the Leafs have 2 games in hand. That's not an ideal situation for you to be in if you're Florida. So they went into Montreal hoping to get an easy one, and they got precisely the opposite. So again, Tank Nation, let me talk to you. I know you probably really wanted this one to be a loss, but you got to hand it to them. You know, they went up against a team that's far better on paper, that really needed a win to try and solidify themselves in second place right now, or even to take a step forward and try to challenge the Bruins a little bit for top spot in the division. And they couldn't get it. They ran into a Montreal team that really gave them a run for their money and frankly outplayed them for most of that game. There was a little bit of pushback in the third period after all the penalties were sorted out, where Florida was getting some chances and obviously the Bennett goal. But you look at that game from a 60-minute perspective, the Habs were the better team, and they deserved that win. And this is another game where you can say, particularly at 5-on-5, if the Habs can take that style of play into next season, they can continue playing games just like that, they're going to win more than they lose. Like, they're going to be closer to a playoff spot, if not challenging for one. So that's encouraging that they're this consistent with their effort on a night in, night out basis this late in the season. The power play is still concerning. You know, basically, how many minutes of 5-on-3 did they end up getting? I don't have the time to check that. It's too late in the night. I got to finish this podcast up and get to bed. But they basically had 3 separate opportunities with varying degrees of time. So I want to say they had about 3 full minutes of 5-on-3 time that they couldn't score on. You have to be able to score on that. You just have to. So they need to figure it out, get to the drawing board. I don't really give a shit if they figure it out before the end of this year and start scoring a couple of them before the season's closed. But you got to have that figured out next season, because those extra goals that you can get in those situations are going to be important if you're fighting, if you're in a battle for a wild card spot, for instance. A couple of extra goals here and there on 5-on-3 could make the difference between you being in the playoffs or being just outside the playoffs with a shitty lottery pick and no playoffs. So, you know, if they're in that territory where they're fighting for a playoff spot, I think we all want them to get in and see what happens. Nobody really wants to be like the dead last odds in the lottery and no chance of getting first overall, right? So with that being said, I think I've gone on enough about the recap and everything else. It's time to get to your player of the game. And I think this one was pretty obvious. I got to go with Nick Suzuki. Now has 32 goals on this season. So the highest goal scoring total that he's ever had, and 71 points. So first time he hits the 71-point mark, or the 70-point mark rather, and then crosses it as well in the same game. The Habs have only played, 74? I should know that. I said the number of the episode before I even started talking today. They've played 74 games. He's got 71 points. So he still has a chance, actually, at hitting that point per game mark. Talked about this in our Players of the Month podcast that we put up the other day. If anybody hasn't listened to that yet, it's probably the next one down that you'll see on Spotify or whatever you're listening on. He has a real shot at it, and they've got a couple of games at Detroit at the end of the year as well. I would not be surprised if he hits 82 points, or if he at least gets to 80. The way that he's playing right now, like he's playing very unselfishly. I would have liked to see him be a little bit more selfish in the 5-on-3 at the end there to try and get himself the hat trick, but playing very unselfishly. So the way he's dishing the puck, you know, he's going to be able to pile up assists in most games, and the way he's shooting the puck right now, frankly, he's shooting it more accurately than Cole Caulfield is, which you could argue is maybe a bit of a problem, but I'm willing to let it slide for Caulfield. I think he's just in his own way a little bit right now. But Nick Suzuki is just flinging it, and he's picking twine whenever he feels like it. So I would not count him out for crossing that 80-point mark for the first time in his career this year. And that's saying something, man. To be able to do that on a struggling team that's at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, it's not easy to do. It's not. And I've said this time and time again. career year after career year after career year. He's done nothing but improve since he joined the Montreal Canadiens, and I can't wait to see what he does when he's got some real lines below him. And we can keep on talking about his line as well, because my close second for player of the game was Juraj Slafkovský. Absolute menace against the Florida Panthers. I mean, he's going to the front of the net. He's taking whacks at loose pucks out there, and the Panthers are a very, you know, cantankerous team. They're getting pissed off about it. They're taking shots at him, and Juraj Slafkovský, he is pushing back. He's not letting himself get pushed around. You know, he's out there wrestling on the ice with guys, you know, throwing some gloved punches. Like, he's mixing it up. He's mixing it up. So not only has he started this year playing like he figured out how big he is, he's acting like it as well in the scrums, and it is an immeasurably wonderful thing for me to see as a Montreal Canadiens fan, that this guy is, you know, not only playing like in the actual gameplay like a guy who figured out what his size is, but that he's acting like it in those scrums, because he's going to give this team some real bite. When they're ready to get into the playoffs, he's going to be one of those guys that you're just going to hate to play against night in, night out. And, you know, he at one point, he was, like I said, he was rolling around the ice with guys. He had Aaron Ekblad on top of him, as well as a ref that was on top of Aaron Ekblad. And he somehow managed to roll over and end up on top of Ekblad with two fully grown men on top of him. He just rolled over. This guy is going to be a freak of a specimen physically when he actually matures into his body. You got to keep in mind, a 20-year-old guy, right? Between the ages of 20 and 24, you can put on an insane amount of muscle and gain an insane amount of strength if you're taking your training seriously, which we know for a fact he does. I shudder to think how much of a specimen this guy is going to be in the next couple of years. It's going to be something, guys. I mean, get excited now, because I think this is just the beginning for him. And he had a fantastic game. He was named the second star, actually, I think. Was he the second? No, he was the third star in the Bell Center. So he was named a star there as well. And he gets a close second for my player of the game on this podcast. So great game, and really a fantastic game from that line. They were dominant against the Panthers. Arbor Jacki had a really good game as well, super physical. Him and Slafkovský, actually, at one point, I forget who it was, but they sandwiched a guy. They did a straight-up Bash Brothers at center ice on one of the Panthers. It was great. I have a clip of it up on my Twitter if you haven't seen it yet, at DrakeMT. There I go, plugging my Twitter again. Jake Evans, you know, big shorthanded goal. And he was big for them defensively in that game, as he tends to be. He was, I think, the second star at the Bell Center. So really good game from him. Yoel Armia continues his resurgence, gets a big goal for them. He was really good for them on the forecheck. Like I said, he drew a call, and he was making it really frustrating. I could throw in the whole second line there on Yoel Armia. I think he's been a linchpin in that second line for the success that they've had. But also Alex Newhook deserves a lot of credit. I think I've said it many, many times on this podcast, playing at a position that I don't think is optimal for him. I think he's better off on the wing, rotating cast of line mates, and somehow it continues to work night after night after night. I think, and this is a theory of mine just from having watched the games, call it an educated theory, if you will, I think that the presence of a better second line behind the top guys is what has enabled them to have so much success. It's what's enabled Nick Suzuki to get to that 70-point plateau. It's what's enabled Juraj Slafkovský to take a step forward, because they can't only focus on that top line. There is still a little bit of you know, other teams keying on that line, sending out their best defensive players to trying to shut it down a little bit. So it's not been easy for them by any stretch. But I think the presence of a good second line has helped them out a lot. And that's why I'm so excited about this team going into next year, because I really think they're going to be able to ice a better bottom six. Matter of fact, I think their second line is going to be even better off, right? Joshua Roy back, Kirby Dach back. Who knows who they're going to end up drafting. I think this team's going to be very different next season, and I think it's going to be fun to watch, because they're already fun to watch now. They're super fun to watch, and they're not even good yet. Their results aren't there, because they're not there yet from a development standpoint or from a personnel standpoint. I think next year they're going to be a lot closer to that from both standpoints, development and personnel. And as long as they keep this exact style of play, I think they're going to be very fun to watch. The last hurdle, it seems, like, and that game was perfect evidence, is like the power play. I shouldn't call it the last hurdle. I want to backtrack on that for a second, because like I said, they still have got some personnel decisions that they have to make. They still got a big draft coming up as well, so there's a lot of work to be done on the roster itself. But the last hurdle in terms of gameplay seems to be the power play, because you look at that game against Florida, it could have been 10-2 in the third period there if their power play was working. Easily. They had multiple 5-on-3s. They had some other opportunities where the team just wasn't, like, there's too many passes. Like, if they can figure that out, some of these games are going to be absolute dog walks for them next season. And again, super fun to watch, not super fun to watch on the power play. Figure that out and you're in a great spot going into 2024-25. Last but not least, I got to talk about the refs. So I'm not going to turn this into a big old rant, but that call, well, the calling it and then reversing the call afterwards really bothered me, because it just shows ineptitude. And then there were plenty of other examples just in the game where it's like, just what are you doing? Like, I talked about the Tarasenko hook, right? Where Tarasenko's draped all over Cole Caufield coming down the wall. By the way, just Cole Caufield in general, they were just not calling anything that was done to him in the second period for whatever reason. And later on in the game, they called, who was it? I think it was Armia. Anyways, it doesn't matter who it was. They called a super ticky-tack hook against the Habs that, like, it's a hook, sure, fair, no problem. Or holding, rather, not a hook. Super ticky-tack hold, it's a hold, so I won't begrudge you that if you really want to call it. But then, you know, I superimpose that, like I quote tweeted myself with the hook, or the hold rather, on Caufield, and I posted that and I said, well, how is one of these a hold and the other one isn't? Either they're both holds or neither of them are. You guys have no consistency whatsoever. And then just on top of that, you guys can't even get a simple goal, no goal call right after you had 2 minutes to sit there and look at fucking tablets and try to figure out what happened. So I don't know, man. If I had a bottle, I rubbed it, genie pops out, says you get 3 wishes. My first wish would be for more wishes. The genie probably tells me to shut up. Second wish would be for the NHL officials to burn it down, start from scratch, right? Get rid of all of the refs that you have and just get new ones. Maybe you can borrow some from the IIHF. I don't know, man. Although IIHF at the last tournament, the World Juniors were kind of suspect. But point being, I would want to burn it down and start all over, because the guys that they've got just aren't doing it. They're terrible. They're absolutely terrible. Gary Bettman, you're an idiot if you think that you have the best officials in professional sports. You do not. I'm going to end it there. I don't want to end it on a negative note, but I guess it's not really that negative. I think most hockey fans agree that the officials are bad in the NHL. So what are we running? Over 23 minutes. Alors, c'est une soirée énorme pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. Thank you, as always, for listening. This episode was brought to you by BetOnline. And of course, à la prochaine.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.